Good evening, one and all. Yes, another week and another book and a chat with me, Barry. Well, I was starting to sort out the bookings for the rest of this year because, you know, I'm always months ahead. I mean, I think I'm now up to towards the end of March now. And I'm great to see, and this is one of the things I really love, is getting some of, excuse me, because I've got a tickle in the old throat. I don't know what it is. We've got some returning authors, and it's great having these authors coming back. And I've got some great ones coming back over the next month, I think. We've got Michael Bond coming back. We've got Steve Berry. He's got a new book out, so he's be back chatting to us again. Always great to have Steve on the come. And Kathy Messias, who we had loads, was on regular as anything to the first 4 or 5 years that we had with the show. She's got another new book out after a bit of a gap, something a bit different as well, but she'll be back on. But when I was looking through, there's always shows that stick out in your mind. And there was one that I couldn't remember who it was. Well, I can remember the lady's name. It was Lucinda Schreiker Smith. And I couldn't remember what the name of the book was. It was one of these ones that sticks in your mind. A Separate God. That's right, I found it. A Separate God was her book. And one of the things, it was the first time I'd come across her book, which is about her life in the Amish faith. And basically what went on behind the closed doors, the abuse and everything like that, because it was within the Amish faith, she went through a lot. And in fact, even now, checking up on her, she's basically having to write under another name because half the people are praising her for what she came out with and half the people are basically after her. It's like Salman Rushdie all over again. Anyway, I got to thinking about things like that and about how abuse and everything can go on behind the scenes or within a family. And lo and behold, I have part of two authors who wrote this book come on the show today. And I'm going to find out a bit more about her, because on the show today, I have the one and only Catherine Wyatt Morley. Hi, Catherine. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Hello to everyone.
Thank you. Well, I am actually, after last year's trials and tribulations, and people know the issues we had last year, so far, touch wood, really pick hard, it's not been too bad. I mean, there's always a few things, but compared to last year, where there seemed to be every other week something was going on, it's not been too bad. But I'm here and you are here, and it's a pleasure to have you here, because you are part of two people who wrote this wonderful new book. But not only that, in your own right, you are founder of several great causes, including, I might add, Women on Reason to Heal, Worth, first and oldest, I might add, HIV positive women's support group in Tennessee, I guess that is. But now, with your daughter, you are sharing, you're basically opening yourself to everybody about, what happened in your life. Even from the moment you were born, it wasn't an easy life.
No, it was not. No, it absolutely was not. And yeah, it has definitely been a true journey. And opening the windows of secrets and lies is what the whole journey has been about, uncovering all of those secrets and lies that I grew up being told. And over the course of my adulthood, came to find out that most of those secrets and lies were exactly that, secrets and lies.
All right. Well, in your book, which is I Am the Product of Rape, which is basically a memoir, you actually lead us through this from, I think, your mother herself. Well, within your family. This is the secrets and the lies were basically within your family that you were brought up with. Don't know how long it had been going on, but there was this was going on within your family, at least way before your mother.
Yes, absolutely. The book, and thank you for bringing that up, the book actually chronologically talks about four generations of women. It focuses on four generations of women, starting with my biological grandmother and then my mother, who at age 7 began to be molested by her stepfather, raped repeatedly, and through acts of brutality and incest, gave birth to me at age 12 on a filthy, stench-filled basement floor in Michigan. And so the third generation of incest, then hence the name of the book, I Am the Product of Rape, which really is, I am the product of the filth. And then the fourth generation is my daughter, Jalion, who at age 8 began to be molested by her older biological brother. And so you see that chronological, generational, from grandmother to mother to me and then to my daughter, how that four generations of incest had just embedded itself within the fabric of my family. And we didn't even know, we didn't even realize that it was actually happening.
So I mean, when did you, obviously your grandmother, if you go back to that, when did that start? Or did you not hear about it? Well, I guess it was one of the secrets that was kept and everything.
Yes, it was one of the secrets. So, you know, when my biological mother gave birth to me at age 12, immediately I was put up for adoption. So I didn't know my biological family at all.
Wow.
I was immediately put up for adoption. The lies that I grew up with took place in that my adoptive family, my adoptive mother, told me a whole bunch of stories, a whole bunch of what turned out to be untruths of what actually my biological family consisted of.
So you didn't even know they were telling you, you know, your family was this, that, and the other, and you didn't even know the truth.
I didn't even know the truth. Exactly. So those were the secrets and lies that I grew up believing. Because, I mean, you know, when your parents tell you something, you believe it as a kid. You know, you just, okay, they tell you and you believe it.
Right.
So I grew up, you know, under the shadow of a lot of secrets and lies that were only discovered in my late 40s when I met my biological mother. First, before I met her, I decided that I was going to have my file the paperwork for my adoption file.
Right.
So after receiving my adoption file and going through that 3-year process and rigmarole that it actually took to get my adoption file, and get it unsealed and sealed and resealed and all of that stuff, it was a long process. Then from there, had a mysterious email from someone who actually helped me locate my biological mother. And in the process of having a relationship with her, then the secrets and lies that I grew up with began to be revealed as untrue. Everything. I mean, I didn't know that she was sexually abused beginning at age 7. I didn't know that she gave birth to me at age 12.
Right.
As a matter of fact, the adoption papers said that she was 14. So even the adoption papers that I had read before I met her were lies. So it was so many untruths, and it was only until after I met her that she began to, you know, uncover all of the things that I grew up with. And then she and I had a relationship until for about 3 years or so, until she just couldn't fathom having a relationship with me anymore. And so she cut that relationship short.
Got too much.
It began to be too much for her. But I entered that relationship very guarded because I knew that that was a possibility. But more importantly than that, I also recognized that she was the woman that gave birth to me. She was not my mother.
Right.
And I knew that. I was very much aware of that. You know, life will teach you to guard your heart over time. And so, like I said, I entered that relationship with her very guarded. So, but then lo and behold, my daughter, the fourth generation, actually backing up just ever so slightly, in the process of trying to find my biological mother, you know, I had given birth to kids and all of that stuff and my children, and I was married. Well, my husband had infected me with HIV. So I was a person living with the disease, and so was my husband. Well, my daughter at 8 years old knew that her mother and father were HIV positive. She was being sexually abused by her brother, my son, and she did not tell.
That's the big thing, isn't it? That's the big thing. It's almost embarrassment or the fact they can't believe sometimes that
right.
they don't tell.
Right. It's guilt. It's shame. It's the heaviness. It's the burden. It's just a plethora of emotions that victims endure in disclosing, even disclosing. I mean, you know, as a person living with HIV, disclosure is a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, who you tell can determine whether or not you have a job. And the same with sexual assault or domestic violence or incest. Who you tell can determine whether or not you are in relationship with that person, whether or not you are, you know, a part of that person's life. Or, you know, so it's strange to me how there's so much stigma associated with sexual assault and sexual abuse. And then we wonder, you know, with so many people you hear that say, well, why did she stay in that abusive relationship?
Yes. Yep.
You know, why didn't she just leave? You know, why did she stay there and continue to be beat up? You have no idea what it takes to disclose, no idea what it actually takes to even walk away from an abusive situation, that in and of itself, and you know, and the mental health issues associated with it, it's a huge. It's not just, you know, okay, I got beat up, so let me leave. It's not that, you know, life is not that way.
Right.
That doesn't even make any sense.
Do you think also if they've been brought up in that sort of environment, they think it's the norm? They think, oh, and my mother used to get beat, so, yeah, so will I. You know, it's part of the family, you know, or part
of
life.
You know, for some, yes. But for others, maybe, you know, no. You know, with you know, some people, there is, for example, the nonprofit that I am founder of, Women on Maintaining Education and Nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
We have been doing the work that we're doing now. We've been in business for 25 years, and a lot of the individuals that we serve and that we work with, they grew up in stable homes, stable environments, two-parent homes, middle-class individuals. I mean, these are not, you know, necessarily poor or disenfranchised. You know, not everybody is poor and disenfranchised and, you know, don't have anything and living on welfare.
Right.
But several of these individuals are domestic violence survivors trying to survive, and they don't have a roadmap. They don't have a history of domestic violence in their background, and they don't know how to process that. They don't know how to handle that. They don't know how to deal with that. So it's not a matter of, well, I saw mom get beat up, so this is the norm. On the other hand, they don't know, they don't even have a roadmap to even compare it to. So I hear what you're saying on the one hand,
right.
You know, some people may have that roadmap, but on the other, a lot of people don't have that roadmap and they still don't know how to process it.
Okay.
That's why you have to have, it's very important to have a clear understanding, a culturally competent community-based organization such as ours that is non-judgmental, that will help people process through things, to have mental health providers that have a history in providing specific mental health services for specific populations, to help them process through how to navigate those waters, because it's treacherous, because oftentimes when people are preparing to leave, that's when it's really dangerous. When you're preparing. Because oftentimes the perpetrator knows it.
Yeah, and that's the dangerous part of it. Yeah, obviously, I can fully understand that. You said about your mother. When did you find out about your grandmother, that it was back, you know, right back that far?
Well, by the time I met my biological mother, my grandmother had already passed.
Oh, okay.
And the person who was the perpetrator of my biological mother had already passed. So those two I have never met.
Okay.
I've seen pictures and, you know, and heard stories and all of that. But one of the other upshots of that is I have two half sisters that I didn't even know even existed. So that has been a tremendous blessing for me. So even though my biological mother couldn't handle having a relationship, my sisters are, because, you know, now I'm the oldest.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, my sisters are excited to have, you know, an older sister. And I have one sister who lives in California, and I'm telling you, she is a carbon copy of me.
Great. Now, your daughter, Jo Lyon.
Jo Lyon.
I was close. Jo Lyon.
Yes, yes.
Now, as you said, I mean, she got pulled into the whole process, you know, with this brother. Was she able to tell you, or did you see the signs, or what happened?
Well, and I appreciate you asking me that. You know, Jo Lyon did not tell me for 2 decades.
Wow.
Literally. 2 decades. And I strongly, strongly encourage people to get the book and read the book, because my daughter wrote the epilogue. Jo Lyon wrote the epilogue, and it is a story in and of itself. But she has been diagnosed with bipolar. And as a child, I didn't know the signs. You know, she clung to me. I didn't realize that. I thought she was just clinging to me because she was afraid that I was going to die of AIDS, because everyone back 25 years ago, you know, I've been walking with this thing for 25 years.
Right.
So everyone back then that we knew that had this disease, including her dad, was dying. And
right.
So she was very clingy. You know, she stayed with me. She had the classic signs, but I equated the signs to HIV and her believing that I was going to leave her with HIV. And she thought that that was you know, part of her behaviors as well. And so she was misdiagnosed. But yeah, it was 2 decades later that Jo Lyon walked in my office at work and told me that her oldest brother, my son, had molested her when she was a child. And the moment she told me, I'm telling you, the instant my daughter told me and revealed that to me, I believed her.
Right.
Without question.
Yeah.
Without question. Without hesitation. I knew she was telling me the truth.
Right. I mean, when you wrote the book, I Am a Product of Rape, which is a memoir, mm-hmm. and of course you said about Jo Lyon and her part's called, what, Burning House, I think, if I remember right.
The Burning House, exactly.
Yeah. Did you find it a healing process as you wrote it, or did it bring up things you'd basically hidden in the, you know, hidden in the dark room?
You know, I wrote it in the beginning to heal. And it really culminated into a healing process for me that even when I crack the pages, even now, and walk down the journey of the words that I wrote, it still brings comfort to me and it brings healing to me. And beyond that, one of the things that makes me so happy and so proud of the book is the healing that Jo Lyon and I receive on a regular basis from other people. The words from the book give voice to the voiceless. So many other people who have read it are continuously saying, thank you so much for saying the words that I have not had the courage to say. Thank you for opening up the doors of dialogue that I finally now have the courage to tell someone what has happened to me.
That's what I was
going
to.
That is what brings me great joy.
I was going to ask that question next, but you've answered it. because that's what we find. You know, I found with the other people who've written sort of similar books or about, you know, about AIDS, HIV, or about abuse, etc., is that they start it off as a, you know, it's bubbled up inside you. I've got to get, and start writing it down on paper, and it's like a healing thing as well. But one of the things that a lot of people, and I find this myself, is that if you read in a book, or if it's a novel or something like that, and the characters suffer, or somebody who's written the book suffer, go through their life, etc., and you've been through that, you immediately put yourself in that person's footsteps, in shoes,
mm-hmm,
rather.
Absolutely.
You know, and in doing it, you're reading it, but you're at the same time, your mind's thinking of how what happened to you and how it's, mm-hmm, affected you, and they think, yeah, this person understands. This person knows, mm-hmm, what I've been through. I haven't told anybody, yeah, ever, but she's been there. She mm-hmm, she knows. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm, that's a great thing, I believe.
It is. It's a great thing. You know, when you're reading someone else's words and they're validating your experience, they're validating your heart, it lends comfort to you, and then you don't feel so alone, you don't feel so isolated, you don't feel so rejected, and you're like, wow, there is somebody out there that hears my heart. They understand. I am not crazy.
Well, that's a big thing I'd have thought, is that the fact that people think it's, you know, they are alone, that nobody understands, mm-hmm, that, you know,
right,
that you don't know what I'm going through. Well, yes, you do.
Yeah, people, absolutely.
You're not the only one. Other people have been through it. So no matter what you say, you know, these people can help it. And in your case, with your book.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And we Jeline and I utilize the book along with, you know, the speaking engagements and the workshops and the seminars and things that we do in order to try to, as I said, open the doors of dialogue for people, to help people to understand that they aren't alone, and for people to be able to unburden themselves. You know, mental health is such a huge, huge deal with sexual abuse, sexual assault, incest, rape. It is, you know, and so oftentimes we hear women and men too talk about how they're raped once, and then society then rapes them again through the forms of stigma, and that is through the forms of re-rejection.
Yeah.
You know, they're rejected in some form or fashion, you know, like rape kits being abused or thrown away or, you know, not processed or whatever. Well, you already went through the horrific act of being raped. Then you go through a rape kit process, and then that rape kit process gets destroyed in some capacity.
Yeah.
That's just horrific. Absolutely horrific.
Yeah. I mean, I know it obviously it seems that it's got better over the last 15-20 years, but even so, it's still there. There's still this whole stigma. There's still this whole being looked at, you know, by people, you know, with that you must have brought it on yourself almost.
Yeah, and you're right. Things have gotten better, but one of the things that I will say, things with regards to incest, and with regards to molestation, those things are more covered up now than
yes.
they once were.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in today's society, you know, there's a new actor or actress or somebody that's, you know, calling somebody out on a regular basis. But the average person, the person who has too much to lose if they did disclose, the regular person, you know, they're not touting horns. They're not on television or anywhere else talking about, yeah, you know, I was raped or molested or whatever, because they got too much to lose.
Yes.
You know, when you're living paycheck to paycheck, you're going to keep that stuff close to the chest, and keeping things close to the chest can lend itself to a whole bunch of mental health issues resulting in alcoholism, drug overdose. You know, we talk about the opioid epidemic. You know, there's a lot of things, you know, stemming from some form of abuse that has not been dealt with.
Yeah, a lot, as you say, a lot of people do this, hide it, clear it up. They don't want their perhaps they're married now. They don't want their spouse to know, or you know, anything like that. And that's it. They don't. They keep it, but all the time it's playing on the back of their mind.
Yeah.
And as you say, it becomes a mental thing.
It does. It really does. And you know, things covered up tend to grow. They yeah. really tend to grow in one form or fashion or the other. That dirt is going to allow for things to grow. And, you know, when things grow, they come out in some form or fashion or the other, whether, like I said, whether that's through alcoholism, whether that's through anger, or whether that's through drug abuse, or, you know, some kind of thing, whether that is through some form of addiction. I mean, we can be overeaters, you know,
yeah.
whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
It's something. And one of the things that we're working with a couple of clients who were bullied as children, and they were talking about their being bullied as children, and it was because they were very much introverted, and they were introverted because they were being sexually abused at home.
Right.
And when they would go to school, they were very introverted. They would stay to themselves, and they didn't have very much to say.
Yep.
And so they were bullied quite often. So when you think about, you know, a lot of these children who are being bullied at school and acting out, we think, well, there's just bullies and bullies and bullies. We're not root causing a lot of the issues that are actually going on in society. And if we dig a little deeper and examine a little closer, we may find that there are things that are buried, in families that the family is doing everything they can to keep it covered up, like my family did.
Right. Well, I know, you know, talking about your family and covering it up, I know that the show and your book have helped, and I'm sure will continue to help a lot of people. But the time is beating us. So what I'm going to – it goes so quick, I know. What I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody, Catherine, where are you, people can find out more about you, your book, and, of course, obviously your 501 non-profit organizations.
Well, thank you. Yes, everyone can go to www.CatherineWyattMorley.com. That is CatherineWyattMorley.com. And on that website, they can get the book and all kinds of information about myself and Julian. And they can also go to www.educatingwomen.org, which is real easy, educatingwomen.org.
All right.
That is the nonprofit website. And so there they can find out all kinds of information about the organization. There are resources, local resources, national resources, international resources on both of those websites. There's speakers forms. My daughter and I are available for speaking. We're available for workshops, which we travel the country and literally internationally as well, doing speaking engagements and workshops. There's a speaker request form on the website, and they can also contact us through both of those websites.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure having you on the show as a guest. I'm sure a lot of people will have learned and will continue to learn and, you know, find help in your book and obviously the other parts that you work on.